Battery power is always dependent on just the amount of voltage and the amount of current that's coming from a battery, as well as AC and DC frequencies, of course.
I'll tell you two different usages of this that I'm interested in simultaneously, right? One usage is related to a project that just got funded, which is where, let's say you have a corporation which is sensitive, has sensitive information, but people are coming in with USB sticks.
Okay.
And they could potentially plug USB sticks into computers, exfiltrate the data, and get out, right? So you want a mechanism where you authorize certain USB sticks to be able to do that, whereas others don't, right? So that's why we need intelligence on the device itself, where that intelligence, first of all, the host knows the device, and the device knows which host it is talking to, because you don't want, you know, there are different classification levels, let's say, right? You don't want a device that has high clearance to be hooked onto a computer that doesn't, and vice versa.
This seems kind of like like you're going to need a key of some type that's supposed to be unique to the device or to the person who has it.
Yeah, signature. You need
the
some
signature.
Kind of signature. And the signature, you know, my collaborator in Gainesville, he has done work on just using the USB protocol messages itself as the signature for both the host as well as the device. It's just the timing based, you can extract unique signatures.
That's interesting. Does he do it without affecting transfer speeds, or?
I guess, yeah, he does do that. Without, yeah, of course, he has to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Is it just a matter of deriving a signature out of, okay, how the USB interface is reacting or responding to various protocol messages?
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the biggest worry is just how easy.
Let's assume, I mean, for the sake of continuing discussion, let's say there is a way to identify the device as well as the host uniquely. Let's say there is a way to do that. And then the USB device, if it's has high clearance, right, should be able to say that, okay, the device it is plugged into, it has certain policies, cannot read from me. It can write into me, maybe, but cannot read from me, or something like that. So there needs to be, the end goal of this project is somewhat, you know, a little bit related, but not exactly the same as the way I'm saying it. But what we really want to do is to tag each block access in and out of the USB device with its identity, or with basically some provenance information. Is what created this data, where it came from, and so on. Right. So the signatures could be a vector of signatures, where one is the source, where it got created, known source, and then where it, the other elements that it went into and came out of.
Okay.
So that's why the USB device needs to have some kind of computing capability and independence from the host itself. So that's one direction. And this is a recently funded, I want to try to get that going. The second one is more exploratory, that is not yet funded. And it's still very initial stages. Is we read papers in the storage systems class where we talked about, well, if you want to make a system reliable, you had to replicate data. You had to replicate state, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember the Mojim paper, for instance, where they had persistent memory.
Yeah, it was not the one over the network?
One over the network. So what they would do is that they would do RDMA over the network to another host and copy the entire page over, right, so that they can make a replica. So when you're doing a write, you wait for that copy over the network, and then you let the application continue. It slows down the application, of course.
Yeah.
But how do you solve this problem? The only you have what is called as the fault and failure domain.
Mm-hmm.
The host itself is a domain by itself, which can fail. And when it fails, you still need to be able to recover your data. So if you just write to the host without writing anywhere else, and the application thinks that it already wrote the data, and the host fails, then you lost your data. The application cannot continue because it's in an inconsistent state. So what people do is that they do over the network replication. But the problem with that is that it's synchronous replication. Before you acknowledge your write to the application, you need to write synchronously over the network.
Yeah.
Okay. So how do you solve this problem? The reason you're writing to the over the network is because you're writing to an entity that has a failure domain that is independent of this host.
Okay.
And there are correlated failure domains. If you have, let's say, a host on a rack of servers, and you're writing to the same to a host in the same rack, they actually share a failure domain, which is the rack level failure domain. If the rack fails, you're gone. You've lost data.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you have to write off rack. And then there is aisle level failure domain, where you have like an aisle of racks. The entire aisle can go away. So you want to do off aisle. So, and then, of course, you can have entire data center failure. So which means that you have to replicate, and which is why we talked about disaster tolerance and so on, right? Disaster.
Then you have it in the same city block, then you have it in the same city, then you have it in the same state, then you have it in the same part of the country, and
yeah,
then you
yes.
have it in the same country, then you have it...
Same country,
it
is, same country is not a failure domain.
It's
not a single failure domain. You cannot take out an entire country. And if you cannot take it out today... Or you could potentially take it out in the future. But then if a country is gone, like, you don't care about internet service at that point. No, we are talking about things like rolling blackouts and earthquakes and hurricanes.
Yeah,
okay.
Of course, making sure to protect against those.
Yeah. So those are sort of the scope of the failures we want to deal with. Yeah, not a nuclear attack. Right? So what am I going to say? Yeah, so okay, so the thing is that there are different approaches to handle these different, you know, kinds of failures. Because server failure is a lot more probable than rack failure, which is a lot more probable than data center failure, which is a lot more probable than a rolling blackout that takes out multiple data centers.
Yeah.
Okay, so these are the assumptions we are working with.
All right.
Okay, so now the question is, what can we do to address one piece of this problem, which is, let's say, host-level failure, or even rack-level failure? You have to replicate the data somewhere else in this data center, ideally not in the same rack, or even in the same aisle. What could you do without incurring network communication?
Without network communication between the two?
Yeah.
What, have the client send it to both at the same time?
But,
that sounds like a terrible idea.
It's a terrible idea because you're duplicating all the work, so which means the capacity of your data center just got cut into half.
Exactly.
That's not a viable solution.
How do you do without any communication?
Okay, think gum sticks. When we talk about failure modes, we're talking mainly about power failures.
Yeah. We're usually not talking about hardware failure, we're talking power.
You could talk about hardware failures too. It could be a hardware failure too.
Of course. but we typically talk about power failures.
Typically talk about power failures, yes.
So...
But at the host level, you could have, let's say, DRAM fail. It's possible.
Yeah.
Or a CPU fail. That's possible. So you need an independent failure domain somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That could be written to and relied upon after failure.
Are we trying to do it just for a certain rack or for an entire data center? For duplication or anything else?
Let's say host level at this point or rack level.
So, I mean, I get the problem, but I'm not really sure where we're trying to go with using this yet.
Using gum sticks?
Yeah.
Can the gum sticks hardware provide an independent failure domain?
I mean, be able to just keep the rack alive, even during a power failure?
Let's think about host. Keep the problem as simple as possible.
Okay, just a single host. I mean...
So what happens when you have a failure? When you have a host level failure, hardware fails. What happens is that you restart the service on a different host.
Yeah.
That's what you typically do.
Mm-hmm.
Alternatively, you don't restart the service at all because your state is preserved and your application is actually a distributed application and it can keep going whenever one thing fails, right?
Yeah.
What you really have an issue with is the persistent state. Is whatever that host was writing needs to be available.
Yeah. So... we're looking to have something that can communicate what didn't make it.
Yes.
Okay. Was there something similar kind of talked about in the Motion paper, was it?
No.
I must have had some random thought then.
The Motion paper talked about RDMA communication to a remote host.
I thought I remembered a paper talking about like a buffer that would basically have a bunch of writes that it would wait on for each one. I thought that was the Motion paper. It was to the other data center. And you wait for a response back saying that it was written before it went on to the next one.
To a different data center?
That's what I understood.
Mojim was within a single data center. But we did read papers that had multiple data centers.
That might have been.
One was designing for disasters.
Was that might have been?
Designing for disasters, that was one paper.
But, so that sounds of a somewhat similar nature, but on a smaller, I think, scale of looking at it as a per host level. So if the smallest scale fails, not the largest, we have the potential of being able to push back whatever didn't make it to somewhere else.
Only if it is available in an independent failure domain.
Yeah. And there's also the possibility that network could be cut off, but let's focus on the smaller problems.
Yeah, but network could be cut off, so what can you have an alternate networking route?
How expensive do you want to be?
So you have wired networks.
You have wireless.
And you have wireless networks of different kinds.
Yeah.
So you could potentially have like a 802.11 BGA, whatever, running on that gun sticks that communicates to some receiving server for all the of the updates that were written only locally, because they were asynchronously replicated to the mirror or whatever backup server.
Okay. So would we be talking to a centralized or just any server that's listening? I mean, other hosts that might be listening.
Could be either way. Either way. But that's, I think the key is to understand that can you create an independent failure domain that can continue communicating even after a host failure or a network hardware failure or a rack level failure or even an eye level power failure, right? Because you need this entity to just have enough power to
hold on to it
to dump all the data that was not acknowledged by the remote server.
If we're going to focus on the battery power, there's going to be a few different things that are particular measurements are going to be important. The speed at which we can recognize that there has been a failure, the speed at which we can have that device acknowledge that there's been a failure so that way it won't continue receiving anything.
Mm-hmm.
This will also contribute to the amount of space that we might be able to expect to be taken up that can be reserved. The other problems that I can potentially see are, well, how it's almost got to be synchronous from this device onto the host as well, in order to even acknowledge from not getting response within whatever time. Let me try and run through the process I'm thinking about. At that point, if we do communicate over Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi is terribly slow, has a lot of potential interference coming in because of its wireless connection and frequencies.
But that's okay, because when you have a server failure, it takes time to restart the service.
I also have to imagine that once this device notices that the host it was servicing is no longer reacting, sending back any responses, that it kind of says, okay, connection kind of shut down, send back.
And go into recovery mode.
Something like that. At which point it will then, I guess, try and communicate with the server, which I don't know if we'll have it continuously connected to anyways, or just
it could,
that
it could be running
connect.
A service, and at that time you could have a connection.
Yeah.
Could be listening on some port which connects.
And it'll probably lower the amount of interference if only devices in recovery are wirelessly trying to transmit. So
exactly.
That's
good. So you could have correlated rack level failures that you have if you have one gum sticks attached to each server in that rack, then they may all try to communicate at the same time and then but the wireless
once again, it just becomes part of scope.
Yeah.
Where you can have one device servicing a rack or certain series of devices connected in a certain way to servicing a rack. And if... Oh, but what if a whole bunch of racks? Well, let's get larger then.
Yeah.
We're talking about expense. The biggest one tends to be not only wireless devices, but battery.
Yes.
Battery is a very interesting technology that doesn't seem to develop too quickly. But there's always something coming out that's interesting. Right now, lithium ion is pretty much
what? State of the art.
Yeah.
Yeah, before that it was
calcium.
Nickel.
Nickel, there we go. Why am I thinking calcium? Was nickel.
Nickel metal hydride or something like that.
It was something.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of why you really weren't supposed to throw it away back then.
Yeah.
With the lithium ones, I know certain behaviors with how you're supposed to charge it and such, but let's assume that it's okay. Let's assume the battery's okay for now when it runs, it'll be perfect.
how much time should we expect it to take for the recovery to...
Those are important questions, but the most important question...
Is it feasible?
Feasible in...
Practical.
Practical. We don't have to worry too much about cost because these, you know, data centers, they're expensive anyway.
Yeah.
Right? We don't have to build like a $40 device.
No.
We can possibly build a $200, $250, $300 device. And it shouldn't be a problem. But what I'm most concerned about is, can you write to this device quicker than you can communicate over the network synchronously? That is the real question. That's the problem we're trying to solve. If we cannot write faster to this device than synchronously communicate over the network, then the whole point of this is lost. The reason we're doing this is that we can, the assumption is that we can write to this device much faster.
Well, with this
at
device...
At least two or four or an order of magnitude faster.
With this device, in my understanding, thought process, theory, we can potentially have this device just send an acknowledgement without actually having to write, potentially. When it assumes that the host is still in service, it's still operational, as long as it's able to buffer, save what was given to it, it can say, acknowledge, send, it's okay. If it then finds out later, oh, the host isn't responding, it then just recovery and sends it off as fast as possible.
Right.
So I would imagine that if you were measured by response times, it'll be quicker. So if we're literally talking about trying to make sure that writes are just as fast as they always were, the device itself will need to be synchronous, but because it should be located by the actual host, the response time should be that much faster for it, as well as its response to that.
Right.
So it should
So you have the host, right, which is running your app.
Yeah.
The application is performing, and let's say this is the OS. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Application is performing writes. The host has locally attached, let's say this is locally attached now, and not some shared rack level stuff. This is GumSticks or some similar technology-based buffer, which has, you know, some kind of wireless capability, right? And this host is also, of course, connected to the conventional network.
And through the network.
And through the network to another host, which is, let's say, a backup. Let's call this backup for now. So these messages are async messages. So when a write comes through here, that write is asynchronously sent out to the backup, but also synchronously sent out to the buffer.
Okay.
So, and when this this is step one. This is step two. Step two. Right.
Yeah.
This is three. And then as soon as step four is an acknowledgement, and step five here
is
an acknowledgement that the write was done. Okay. Now, what happens eventually is the backup acknowledges that the async write is done. Right? So let's say this is some step happening at some later time. That this data, let's say W, acknowledgement for W, right, comes in at step 11. One thing that the host needs to do is to trim trim W. So that wherever W was is freed up. So that's why this is like a circular buffer.
Yeah.
Not necessarily circular because you can get acknowledgements out of order.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's what you need to do. So you need a limited amount of space here, which is more or less the proportional to the latency of this round trip.
Yeah. Okay.
And the speed at which things are being accumulated here.
Well,
so it's directly proportional to write rate.
Yeah.
As well as latency of ACK. The size of this buffer.
I mean, if we were to run into worst case scenario, the buffer gets full and we haven't gotten enough a speedy acknowledgement from the backup through the network.
Or the write rate suddenly exploded. One thing which we could do is that if this is full, we don't send the step 4.
Yeah,
so the application gets throttled.
Application kind of gets starved a bit.
Throttled. Yes.
It stopped. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably more accurate. Starved is a resource thing.
Yeah.
But I mean,
but this is sort of the overall picture. And then, of course, there is network communication when there is failure. Okay, so at some point, this guy tries to send an acknowledgement or maybe heartbeat messages need to be exchanged.
Okay,
right? Some kind of heartbeat messages. And the heartbeat messages in step 21, there is a failure. So which means that GumSticks needs to communicate with either the backup directly in step 22. All of this stuff, just flush everything out and get an acknowledgement back in step 23.
I mean,
ACK for flush. Right? And then, you know, it's done. Its life cycle is over for the time being.
I mean, if we think of...
So can you build something like this? Is the question. And can you build something
we
that...
We might have to...
Yeah.
As just a guess, we might have to either build a module or some type of modification to the kernel that tells it... Or... Yeah, so it has to be somewhere on the operating system level that we have to modify in order to tell it that use this device first, then send it over the network.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it sounds plausible. The biggest worry is kind of the same thing we always had when we were trying to gather information. And that seems to be how much are we going to need for things like memory? And
so
There needs to be what?
There needs to be a significant amount of DRAM in there to buffer all of the stuff.
Yeah, especially in the worst case scenarios.
Yeah.
So
the worst case scenario is that the application slows down.
Yeah, and that's when the buffer gets full.
Yeah.
So that's
so it's an automatic there is an automatic safeguard there. It's not that you're going to have a buffer overrun. It's just that if the buffer is full, you don't get an acknowledgement back in step 4.
Yeah.
And the host does not acknowledge the application. If the application does not get an acknowledgement, it cannot proceed any further. So it cannot generate any more writes.
Okay. So at least the state would be consistent.
Yeah. That's how the operating system actually deals with high volume, right? I mean,
yeah,
if you load the OS...
context switching and everything.
Yeah, I mean, if you load a lot of... You keep creating applications all the time or... application processes, at some point all your application processes slow down proportionately, right? And the operating system just makes sure that everything is going progressing but slowing down.
Yeah.
So if you slow down like that, what it means is for the data center administrator, you have to provision another server to run that service to share the load. That's what it means. But the key is to make each host to do more than what it could before.
Yeah. No, I'm just trying to think of a potential scale that... I don't know... You have more experience, so maybe I have no idea.
No.
But
I have very little experience.
Oh, I didn't know. But would they be actually able to have their network stay up without their host staying up at a... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm thinking too large, probably. Right now we're just focusing on a host failure.
Single
not,
host, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to focus on large right now. If at all.
Yeah, if at all. I mean, the first thing is to solve the simplest problem. If we can solve the simpler problem, then maybe we can look at...
I mean, it would just be a consistently expanding problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I was getting a crazy idea.
Go ahead.
There's the possibility of not needing, assuming that traffic is roughly, well, that would probably be a bad idea, so never mind. I thought that maybe the acknowledgements could come back straight to the buffer, so that way the OS didn't need to tell the buffer that there was an acknowledgement.
But that would mean continuous wireless communication.
I wasn't thinking the wireless part, but yeah, I understand that. What pinch you mean? Because I mean, you could stick an Ethernet connection there or something.
But that may fail as well. That would be a correlated failure to the host, because if you want to plug in an Ethernet connection into that gum sticks, then a network failure would take down both the host and the gum sticks, which is why I wanted some like an independent network as well.
Okay. So,
the main is the feasibility and of this device, because this device could potentially have more uses, including, you know, if we build an infrastructure to using gum sticks or something similar to prototype a device like this, then we could use it for not just this project but also the other project. It's basically, you know, a lot of the work that goes in will go into just making this device work. I believe that Gumsticks runs Linux, some kind of embedded Linux, but still it's a Linux.
Yeah, it's probably similar to some other projects like BeagleBone or maybe even Raspberry. Well, if it's running embedded Linux, it's running an embedded chip. Those other two run on ARM. So.
You mean Raspberry Pi and Arduino?
BeagleBone is a Texas Instruments thing. Yeah, also, it's open source, but it's a different community.
Right. Yeah, so one thing which I want you to do is, assuming you're interested in this, is to first of all, look at these various technologies, including gum sticks and Raspberry Pi, in terms of, you know, how straightforward it is to connect to a server, a device of this kind, how big it is, what...
It depends on what kind of connection we really want to use to connect to the server.
Whatever connection we choose needs to be
fast.
High performance.
Very
mainly.
High performance.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, obviously you can't use something like USB.
Okay.
I don't imagine you could. It's a very slow protocol by comparison to some of the other parts of the computer.
I don't know about USB. There's this USB 3.0, whatever it is. I don't know how fast it is. But let's say that it is not.
Yeah.
How do we connect to the device? We could use Ethernet.
We could potentially use an Ethernet connection, which is partly why I was thinking potentially that the host could have the buffer literally in the way of the network connection.
In the way of the... Oh, you mean inside the network? But,
like...
inside the switch, maybe?
Should have probably put that like that, but if we have an Ethernet connection that connects to one side, then an Ethernet connection straight to the host, but have Wi-Fi ready, or even just actually at this point, you wouldn't need a Wi-Fi, would you?
Oh, you would, because of the network fails, you still need to be able to communicate.
Okay, yeah. Does that mean the backup itself has Wi-Fi as well, or are we talking that the network also has a Wi-Fi version? I don't know why I'm drawing like that.
The network could be... the network is unlikely to have Wi-Fi.
Okay.
But it could. I mean, it doesn't have today, but you, if you could make a case for it, then sure.
I mean, we're assuming the backup is nearby with wireless as well. Or we have some type of way to connect to the backup through wireless.
Yes.
But, I mean...
Or it could be a centralized receiver.
A centralized receiver. So we could have... I have no idea what I'm drawing like this. That might be able to connect back to the network. Or
yes.
To the backup itself.
Yes.
So
I mean,
that way,
it makes sense.
In case this end was bad, then
yeah,
that might still be good.
Okay.
So, but the problem with this is it assumes that network communication is purely going to be based on the backup, which is not true.
Not true.
And things like that. So that's the biggest problem that I had when I actually first thought of it.
Yeah, because you have
so,
an incoming request stream, and the backup is could be on an independent network.
Yeah, so the buffer would have to be probably not... Unless the server, I mean, sorry, the host, would have two Ethernet connections, which, I mean...
Which could.
Yeah,
yeah, which is not unreasonable.
It's not unreasonable. I mean, I've had computers with two. But... Internet.
I think the main challenge is to be able to create a device that you can write into very fast. High bandwidth.
If we assume it's battery power and that we're going to be able to hold all this information and we allow it to be volatile, we can kind of let it be anything that's really fast, like particular kinds of RAM, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
So...
But you also need to be able to have a CPU that can service all those incoming packets or incoming data, right?
You mean
on the
from the host
stage.
To the buffer, or
inside the buffer itself? You need a CPU, right?
Yeah, you always need something to actually do the work.
That needs to be fast enough too, right? To be able to handle.
Yeah, we can't use a. Low clocked thing. It might need to be a specialized CPU then that can run at a high clock rate and get and it's specialized enough that it can take a few clocks, not too many, to get the job done.
Well, ideally, you want.
How fast do we need it? I don't think we need it. I don't think we need it in the gigabytes, do we? I mean, the gigaflops or gigahertz.
No.
What the
hell? Well,
gigahertz, whatever.
Yeah, you don't need. You don't. I don't think you need gigahertz. You need like hundreds of megahertz, maybe.
Oh, that's everybody's got something.
Yeah.
100 megahertz.
Yeah.
So that's not a.
Because you need to keep that powered using.
Yeah.
Some source. I mean, if you're using the battery all the time, that's probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
You probably want a source that, first of all, charges your battery. So you need, ideally you need, one of the reasons for saying USB is because USB can also provide power.
Yeah.
Whereas Ethernet cannot.
Well, I know it's certain devices, you have a Chromecast at all?
The Chromecast
thing?
Yeah. The HDMI stuff?
The newer HDMIs actually are able to provide power back into the devices. However, on older TVs, they don't. But some of these TVs also have USB. One of the things we can do potentially is steal the power from your USB while still...
Use the Ethernet.
Yeah. This might not look too favorable because we're using up two ports, but I mean...
But we're also solving an important problem.
Exactly. and because of how, I mean, the device would appear like it can be a low voltage embedded device, no problem.
The new Chromecast devices with HDMI, can we have a server, if you assume that it has an HDMI port? What can we do?
I have no idea.
Because the HDMIs have high bandwidth.
They do have high bandwidth, but I don't know how we can use those connections.
I mean, I've never heard of the HDMI port being used for anything other than video. So, I mean, the potential's there.
Yeah. So these are all the ideas that I want you to go back and munch on. And also figure out, you know, which of these devices, because I want to place an order so that you have something to play with. So I could probably order all of them.
I mean, we can always try and go with, I'm trying to write down, well, I might as well make sure to have this unread.
Well, I'm also recording our conversation. So
that's also important. But I'll take a picture of this as well, so I can have some stuff in mind.
But yeah, I mean, like I said, I think the biggest potential problem is the requirement that the host operating system would need to be modified, but that's probably a minor comparison, and we can make it into just a kernel module for the most part. Maybe. The device seems easy enough. All you have to do is to have a couple different states.
Yeah. So why don't you, you know, just let this sink in, and then we can have another chat.
Would that be also after the meeting Friday, or is there another time that you prefer?
Meeting on Friday is, yeah, we could do it on the, no, that's, if we have a short meeting on Friday, yes, we can, because I have another one at 11. But let's plan on doing that short meeting on Friday, and then, in the meanwhile, I want you to think about this, and also, you know, research the possibilities for that device, and interconnect and so on.
Yeah. I'll try and look and see if which devices look, what's the word looking for? Easier to prototype this kind of device with.
Yeah.